It's On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea. It's a midterm election year, but this one finds women running for office in record numbers. Nationally, the number of women running for the U.S. House and Senate is almost double what it was in 2016. Here in Georgia, the trend holds. The Democratic nominee for governor will be a Stacey Abrams or Stacey Evans, whichever wins the primary. Many more women are also running for local offices. Why is this larger group of female candidates happening? My colleague Leah Fleming spoke with four women who have sought elected office in Georgia. Sarah Riggs Amico, running for lieutenant governor of Georgia, State Representative B. Wynn, and Mary Margaret Oliver, and State Senator Kay Kirkpatrick.
I want to first ask you ladies, what made you decide to run for office? Did you have any reservations in doing so? And I want to start, I think, with Mary Margaret Oliver on the phone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I did not grow up in a political family and did not have much, if any, contact with politics. In fact, I had never walked into the state capitol until I was over 30 years old, even though my home is about 6 miles away. But I was assigned from my then employer, which was in my 20s, Georgia Legal Services, to work on a project in relation to foreclosure notice to homeowners, and I walked into the Capitol and immediately became fascinated with this process that I, as just a legal services lawyer, could access and participate. Shortly thereafter, I went into private practice with my then Senator Pierre Howard and in Decatur, and have been in private practice since, and watched him closely as a lawyer and a state legislator do both jobs, and ran when the House seat became open.
What about you, Kay Kirkpatrick?
Yeah, I retired from my orthopedic surgery practice after 30 years of practice, and at that exact moment, my state senator resigned to run for Congress. And I started getting calls because I'd been involved in advocacy on behalf of doctors and patients for many years, and also had been a leader in my practice for many years. And I decided that I might have something to offer, and that's why I ran.
What about you, B?
Win. Like Mary Margaret Oliver, I grew up in a household that wasn't very political. My parents are former refugees from Vietnam, and they fled a country that didn't enable them to elect the people who represented them, and they did not teach us how to vote or become civically involved. And, you know, as an adult, I recognize the sense of disempowerment my parents had and the fact that people who people don't represent people who look like my parents. And so I ended up working on a bill as an advocate called Pursuing Justice for Rape Victims, which cleared the backlog of rape kits. And at the Capitol, when I was talking to all these senators, everybody was a white man. And here we were talking about an issue that impacts women disproportionately as survivors. And many of the men had never talked to a survivor before. And that was the first time I felt like I belonged at a place like the Capitol.
Sarah Riggs Amico, this is actually your first run for office. What made you decide to do that?
You know, it's funny. I run a company called Jack Cooper. We are the largest car haul company in North America. So the double-decker trucks that you see going down the highway full of cars, that's what we do. We made an unusual choice several years ago to fully fund health insurance premiums for every one of our employees. As costs were skyrocketing, most employers asked that their employees contribute more. And effectively, if you're not giving them a raise to cover that, then you're giving them a pay cut. So we decided to go the opposite direction. Last year, we introduced paid parental leave for our employees. We've experimented with on-site daycare. And so at a certain point, these issues sort of came into the boardroom for me. And so looking at the metrics, I thought, oh my goodness, you know, if I don't run, how do I know that somebody who wants the same level of accountability and that has the same track record of delivering results will take this job and will be able to go out and be a real voice for working families? And for me, it's appalling to me to watch people who've been in office for decades who have yet to deliver for the people of Georgia. So for me, it was a little bit of a moment to just say enough.
Well, speaking of saying enough, a lot of women are doing that. According to the Center for American Women in Politics, which is located at Rutgers University, at least 79 women are exploring runs for governor in 2018. That potentially doubles a record for female candidates, which was set back in 1994. Now, there are two women that are running for Georgia governor, by the way, Stacey Abrams and Stacey Evans. And I want to ask you, what do you think is behind this cultural shift in large numbers of women that are running for office? Is it the Me Too movement, the pink wave, as it's been called, after this historic women's march, after the election of Donald Trump? Is it something else? What do you think is behind that? Mary Margaret Oliver, what do you think?
Obviously, it's all of the above. I think the shock that I personally felt at Donald Trump defeating Hillary Clinton was felt by countless other women, particularly women. I think that even though I've been in politics a long time, it still was a very big shock to me that every indication about our polling data and our conventional wisdom of those who said they knew was totally wrong. President Trump's comments that we don't need to review all that about women are, and as they are in the news today, pretty horrific. And I think that people have responded, women have responded, on an emotional, personal level that enough's enough. I believe the Emily's List has gone from 700 candidates interested in, women candidates interested in politics, to 15,000.
Yeah, especially in these national races, we're hearing stories about women being coached on how to perhaps appear less feminine. So maybe not so much about bringing the baby onto the floor, but we're hearing about that. And I'm wondering, with you, Sarah, as you are running for office, have you had any training like that? Has anybody kind of whispered in your ear that you need to think about this?
Not more than once. You know, look, I've spent most of the last 15 years, I'm about to go to my 15-year reunion for business school, and most of the last 15 years, I've been the only woman on a management team and certainly the only woman on a boardroom. In fact, when I was made chairman at Jack Cooper, the first thing I did was add another woman. It happened to be African-American, but I added her because she's phenomenal. Her skill sets were incredible. And it was amazing to me how much more robust and thoughtful and multifaceted our discussions became. And because of that, the governance of the business became much better. And I think the same thing will happen when the halls of power, whether that's under the Gold Dome or in the corporate boardrooms, look more like the communities where we live and work. And so for me, I'm used to being the only girl around. But I think we need to teach women to play to their strengths, whatever they are. And I don't believe that's monolithic by gender. I think that's unique to the individual. Women do have an incredible capacity for empathy. And I think right now empathy is something we could see a lot more of in our government, in the way we make policies. You know, this is the first time in my life that I can ever remember our politicians spending more time telling us why we should be afraid of our neighbors or of other, instead of telling us what unites us as Americans. So for me, no, I haven't been coached. I mean, we did the focus groups at the beginning of deciding to run as part of our polling, and it was an experience. You know, for a first-time candidate, I married a man who was not born an American. He chose to be an American and became a citizen actually at Turner Field over a July 4th weekend some years ago. And a pretty emotional ceremony watching him and people from 100 countries around the world take the oath of citizenship. And so one of the pieces of feedback that we got was that my last name sounded foreign, Amico. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't know what to tell you. It is, you know, but I don't think that makes me less American or less capable. If anything, I think it makes my family quintessentially American. Like B, our family mixes languages, foods, culture. We pile children on, you know, transcontinental flights to visit grandparents. It's, I'm proud to be a part of that story. So no, nobody's tried to coach me, and they certainly wouldn't make much traction.
Yeah. If you're joining me, I'm speaking with Sarah Riggs Amico, B. Wen, Kay Kirkpatrick, and Mary Margaret Oliver. And Mary, Margaret, I want to ask you a question. Political scientists in general say that an influx of women candidates does not necessarily mean that more women will be inspired to vote for those candidates. And I'm wondering, what do you make of that?
The political science around gender gap is a pretty hot topic right now. And we know, looking at the recent elections over the last several election cycles, that the gender gap has been stronger some years than others. I think women are realizing that the variety of women going into politics now is a huge strength for them. There are more different characters of types, kinds, roles of women that are in politics. Now, when I first came into the Capitol as a very young do-gooder lobbyist, every single woman elected was older, married, had been a stay-at-home traditional volunteer for a good while. Not one worked outside the home. During my political life, that has totally changed, to where women represent every aspect of our working and family roles. It is still true, though, I think, that women are carrying more of the family role as they leave their home for work, whether it's work at the Capitol or work at my law office or work at Sarah's business.
Mm. What do you think, Kay?
Well, I would have to say that hasn't been true. In my marriage, my husband worked part-time because he could, and I worked very full-time because I could. And we shared the responsibilities, but I would say it's been pretty much an equal split.
An equal split for you all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, B, what advice do you have for other women that are perhaps considering a run for office?
Just do it. Statistics show us that it takes women 5 to 7 times of somebody asking them to run on average before they decide to run, and that's not true for a man. I was in that same spot. I did not decide to run initially. I had to be asked to run very persistently, by, in particular, by one young woman who became my campaign manager. The reasons I didn't want to run were, why should I run if there's somebody else already running, somebody else who was qualified, somebody else who would do a good job. And so it took me, you know, moments, many moments, to make that decision to put myself out there. And the questions I had were also, am I prepared for this? Which I was in many ways, in which I was not in many ways. But I think that's true of anybody who decides to run for office. It is a huge learning curve. And the things that you think you would do, the things that you think you are, change when you're in that particular environment, and everything that you believed, you know, was going to happen may not necessarily happen when you get in that space, and it's perfectly fine. I think that is one thing that we don't talk enough about as elected officials, is the reality of what it actually means and what it's actually like once you get in those chambers. It's very different than what it's like to be a candidate running for office. And quite frankly, I'm not sure that anyone could ever be qualified enough to understand what that exactly means.
You found that to be the true, Kay?
I 100% agree with the steep learning curve of being a candidate, but also of being in your first session in the legislature. There is a sort of a handbook, but it's not, it doesn't tell you anything really about how things actually work down there. And obviously, as one of the two female Republicans in the Senate, have a little bit different experience probably than B had, but I found the men to be very welcoming, and that's not always the case with all the women. So I got along just fine with everybody, but I really was disappointed in the difference between my other job, where I could actually get things done without a whole lot of trouble by getting the right people in the room, asking the right questions, and so on, versus the legislature, where it's very hard to make things happen. And maybe our founding fathers planned it that way so that we wouldn't do too much. And that's why we have three branches of government. But yes, I think the learning curve is very, very steep.
Yeah. Yeah. What advice do you have, Mary Margaret?
I've worked in three different cultures, work cultures, a traditional law practice litigation culture, and an academic culture I've taught for a good many years in law schools. And then the political culture. The political culture is totally different. I think it's attractive to me, still attractive to me, because it is so diverse and so freewheeling. But in the political culture, there's really not a rule book. There's very seldom somebody really in charge. The sanctions for bad behavior are fleeting and non-existent. Whereas in my law practice, simply a more rational place to do work, and it's a more intellectually honest place to do work. The shock of politics to me is not so much not being able to get things done, which I certainly understand and sympathize with, but there's such a dramatic difference of opinion and fundamentally different approaches to government that I kind of expect that. What I still can't get over in the political arena is what I consider just simply bad behavior that's not acceptable in a traditional work environment.
What about you, Sarah? What advice do you have? Are you excited, first of all, to see more women running for office?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have two daughters, 5 and 7 years old, and I think having all of these women, and candidly on both sides of the aisle, running for office will mean that when they grow up, this doesn't seem like an odd thing to do for them. So I think it's important that government starts to reflect the communities where we're representing the people. My advice would be similar to Bea's, do it. There's no disadvantage to participating. I think, you know, the enemy of democracy is not a political party. It's not a political figure or candidate. It's apathy. It's the lack of engagement on the part of everyday citizens to believe that they can make a difference, whether that's with their one vote or whether that's with the opportunity to run for office.
That was Sarah Riggs Amico, who is running for lieutenant governor of Georgia. You've also heard from State Representatives Bea Wynn and Mary Margaret Oliver, and we heard from State Senator Kay Kirkpatrick with us. Thank you to all of you ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.